All right, it's Midsummer. Who's been camping?
Not to be confused with the movie Midsommar.
No, that's a whole
Midsommar, yeah, that's a weird movie.
Who's been camping? I have not been camping yet this summer.
No,
haven't. I want to go. Have you guys?
I haven't yet either.
You haven't been camping either?
No, man, Ramsey. My schedule has just been too crazy right now.
You know, man. It's funny. I'm Eric.
I'm Anna Elise Beckman.
I'm Logan.
And we do have a guest we'll introduce soon, but he's already talking. So welcome, Ramsey.
I was going to say, we better introduce him now.
Hi.
Well, Ramsey Plouts could not wait to get with us because he caught us talking about glamping and camping with a purba.
Not too long ago.
And so we talked about all of those things where you can bring your luxury RV into the woods. And Ramsey is kind of at the opposite end of the scale when it comes to camping adventures. So you want an equal time, basically, right, Ramsey?
Yeah, I love coming and talking about this kind of stuff. So whenever I get the opportunity, I'm all for it.
All right, so let's assume you go into the camping areas with all your gear or your RV or whatever, and all that stuff goes away, and you find out you got to forage and live off the land. We've talked about bushcrafting before, but throughout the year, in different times, in different seasons, there's different things and different ways you can forage to keep yourself going.
This is true. I do, for the people who have not heard the previous foraging or bushcrafting, I guess we haven't done foraging, but previous bushcrafting episodes, can we get a elevator pitch of a very short building of your take on bushcrafting?
Bushcrafting is just surviving and thriving in a natural environment, using the things that you have around you, going out there with minimal gear, minimal tools, and being able to survive and live comfortably out there. So that's kind of what that is.
Perfect. And one of the ways to do that is to forage, find the foods you can eat in the woods, because there's plenty to eat and drink out there in the wild.
Yes,
we
indeed.
Did it for many thousands of years before we invented Oreos and said, okay, let's build a house and do this, right?
I feel like it's built into our intuition, but now, since we haven't learned that as a youngster, we have to learn it from Ramsey.
Well, you know, the other day we were filming Discover Wisconsin. We were on this trail, and there's all these little berries on all these little trees, and it's
please
like...
Please tell me you were not eating them.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, are these edible or are these not?
The birds are eating them. I think I can.
I was tempted, you know, and there's mushrooms growing
is
everywhere.
Is that why your it's face like, is purple today?
Are these the... No, I just got a lot. The sun, and I've been up really early. Purple? Is it really purple?
No, I just wanted the viewers.
Oh, okay.
Listeners, I should say. To
still a little sunburned, but still. So we're going to be talking about things you can do when you need to forage out in the woods or, you know, wherever you happen to be. That will be our topic today on The Cabin. The Cabin is brought to you by the Wisconsin Counties Association, and this week we're featuring Jackson County, which is a good place to forage. There's a lot of rural space there.
Oh, nice tie-in.
Yeah, a lot of miles from everywhere spaces in Jackson County. It's in west central Wisconsin on the edge of the Driftless area, filled with forest and more. Jackson County was formed in 1853 from a formerly much larger Crawford County, which once dominated the whole western half of the state. It was named after President Andrew Jackson. County is exactly 1,000 square miles. It's kind of a neat little trivia nugget.
A little fun fact.
The county seat is Black River Falls, which is a beautiful town on a falls on the Black River. So, I mean, when they said, what do we name this place? Ended up being a pretty easy decision.
How original.
Yes. The administrative center for the Ho-Chunk Nation is headquartered in Black River Falls. One of the casinos, actually, is located on the east side of town. Black River Falls, this is an interesting thing. It kind of ties in. Black River Falls is the focus of a book by Michael Lessie called Wisconsin Death Trip.
Mm.
Came out in 1973. Used photographs and newspaper cuttings to highlight the harshness of life in the community during the late 19th century and the effects it had on the psychology of the inhabitants.
Wow.
I know, it's a little dark, right?
That's really cool.
And it was made into a movie in 1999.
I was going to say, that sounds kind of like a Ramsey book.
I think
life.
You would. That seems like something you would totally
want to
read.
I think
totally
I would really
read,
like that
yeah.
too, yeah.
So,
I'll let you know how it is.
But, you know, life can be tough, and that's why we're going to be talking about foraging. Help you out with that. By the way, Black River Falls and Jackson County is home to a large population of the otherwise endangered Kerner blue butterfly. And that gave the city the opportunity for a unique festival called, creatively enough, the Kerner Blue Butterfly Festival.
This county is really just upping its originality
here. Yeah, and that festival, by the way, the Kerner Blue Butterfly Festival, just happens to be this coming Saturday, July 23rd.
Are you going
to
go, Eric?
No, I'm going to be filming elsewhere.
Not at that festival. That would
but,
be pretty cool.
Yeah. If you love craft breweries, Black River Falls is home to Sand Creek Brewing, which was the pioneer brewing company for a while prior to 2004. Their tap room and brewery is in kind of a residential neighborhood, just a little bit south of downtown, but a great place to stop in and check out. The city's brewing history, though, dates back to 1856 when the Odor Bowls Brewing Company was first established.
That's an interesting name.
Yeah. Somebody's name, right? And throughout Jackson County, there's, again, a lot of open space, a lot of forest, some cranberry bogs and more, but you'll also find Alma Center, Maryland, Hixton, Melrose, among others. It's a great place, actually, to go camping. And if you need to access the county, I-94, US 12, highways 27, 54, and 95 will give you access to all points throughout the county.
Cabin is also brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. It's that classic flavor that we all know and love. The classic Jolly Good Soda with its Wisconsin roots. It is one of our favorite beverages. What kind did you guys get?
I've got the Diet Root Beer.
I'm Lemon Lime today.
Lemon Lime.
I got a regular root beer.
Regular root beer. You can also get the grape, orange. They've got blue raspberry. And can't forget the cream soda. One of the all-time favorites.
Oh, the cream soda is phenomenal.
So good. So good. Plenty of choices to get your favorite flavor. Also found in your local grocery stores throughout the Midwest, making it very convenient. You can get it in single cans, six-pack, 12-packs. Find it at Festival Foods, Piggly Wiggly, Woodman's, Syndic, Century, and now at Hy-Vee locations. If you don't see it at your local store, you can also ask your store manager to order it. Definitely one of those nostalgic drinks. Great for a summertime soda. You can also get it in diet. They've got various flavors on the diet line. Great for camping, summer vacations, on the beach. You can follow Jolly Good on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and stay informed on their latest product news, new flavor releases, seasonal promos, and their new product availability.
And their handle is at Jolly Good Soda, sweet and simple.
Yes, follow them.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to support local.
Shall we light this campfire and begin our foraging?
Yes.
All right.
Wow.
The fire has been lit.
The fire has been lit. Ramsey, did you light that?
That was good. It's nice and toasty.
What did you use to light that fire,
mid-July,
Ramsey?
It's mid-July, you know?
Yeah, I rubbed some sticks together.
Wow.
You know, made a little friction fire there.
Is that how they are doing it these days? I used to do that all the time when I was a kid, like at the playground under the slide with rocks. I was like, come on, guys. I'd get all my friends and we'd rub rocks or sticks together. And I was convinced that I would start a fire.
Well, I don't know if you Never rub did. Rocks. Don't you kind of strike them together?
I was
if
like
you can...
seven. I don't know.
Okay.
I needed Ramsey. Where were you my whole life?
Up here in
the
Northwoods.
Yeah, I know.
Foraging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's crack into it. So
yeah.
I was going to ask Ramsey, I know that, so I've done very minimal foraging, I guess, hunting for morels. You know, me and my dad will go asparagus hunting in the spring, late spring, depending on, you know, when the peak season comes up. But summer foraging, I would have no idea what to even look for in Wisconsin. So I know that this is for season foraging, but since it is the middle of summer, let's start there. What kind of stuff do you forage for?
Well, so there's a lot of stuff throughout the state, a lot of herbs and medicinal things that grow all year round, various flowers and, you know, vines and that kind of stuff that you can use. But as far as the summer season's forageable items, there's not a ton. Spring is a lot better for it. Fall, you get into some different things too. Winter is going to be a lot tougher. But summer doesn't have a ton of stuff.
Huh.
But some of the things, like you had said, wild asparagus will continue to grow. It kind of comes up in the spring, but it'll continue going throughout the summer.
So where does asparagus grow? I mean, in just random spots throughout the state? Or what's funny is I just saw a picture of how asparagus grows what it looks like when it's growing. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a prank somebody would pull to try and convince you that that's how asparagus grows.
It is weird. But it's because it's one stalk.
Stalk straight up in the ground. Yeah. You're like, really?
Well, it kind of looks like somebody stuck one in there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it grows. Yeah. It's so weird.
But it's, I mean, asparagus is tricky. And Ramsey, you can probably speak more to this, but it is hard for me because I haven't hunted enough for it that I don't have the eye. I confuse it with a lot of other of those kind of bushy looking plants. And you can really confuse it if you haven't seen it enough. You really have to look for the little kind of arrows that are on the stem.
Yeah, the leaflet things.
But I didn't know that you could hunt for them all summer.
Yeah, so the best that I've actually found them has not been in the woods. It's been on the ditch along the highway.
Asparagus?
I've heard that too. Yep. Along fence lines, right?
Oh, along fence lines.
Wait, asparagus grows along highway roadsides?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm already learning.
If you're good at finding it, and if you can get an eye for asparagus, you'll be able to find it as you drive by.
Nobody's ever said that to me before. if you can get an eye for asparagus. I can't believe it grows.
Welcome to the foraging podcast.
I mean, I've never been aware that I've seen that. But now I'm really going to have to pay attention.
You're just passing it left and right, Eric.
I guess so.
Eric's in the middle of a highway. If you got stranded, it's an important thing to know.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Some of the county roads, not like 51 or 29 or anything, but like some of the county roads, the lettered ones, you can get it. My girlfriend's parents live off of Highway U in Marathon County, and there's a guy that, you know, every year shows up, picks a bunch of asparagus, and takes off again.
Huh. So... Does it grow back, Ramsey?
It does. So that's one of the things that you got to keep an eye on and kind of call it foraging ethics is you don't want to harvest the whole plant. Mm. The biggest thing that you want to do is make sure that some of that plant stays behind because then it'll continue to grow back every year. So kind of a rule of thumb is you want to harvest no more than 20% of the plant. With asparagus, it's a little different because that's just a vertical stalk. But if you leave the bottom 2 inches... above the ground, cut it off above that, and it'll grow back next year.
Oh, that's interesting. But it won't grow back that same season.
No. Okay. Once it goes up, it's done.
Yeah.
So it'll hibernate through the winter and regrow itself.
Yep. Huh. It's one of those perennials.
Well, and that's kind of how you look
for
it, too,
right? Asparagus is a perennial.
You look for it based on the old stalk a lot of the time, right?
I don't know. I've seen it. I've seen them out there, harvested it out there.
I've just seen really tall stalks. And so typically when you find one, there'll be, I mean, similar to the other stuff.
Okay, if you're going that route. Hmm. Once you find one, there's going to be younger growth around and you can harvest some of the good stuff. But yeah, if you leave asparagus grow too long, I mean, it'll go, you know, what, 3-4 feet tall?
Yeah, but it tastes, it's... I tell people it's like candy, and you just eat it raw. I just eat it right. Like half the time, me and my dad we'll have like a bag of it, and I'm walking around just eating it, and then we'll get home. There's maybe like one or two left because I've eaten them all. But I think they're better raw than cooked when you get them fresh like that. So they do taste
Everything's better fresh.
Yeah, they taste way different than when you get them in the store, and they're a lot thicker. A lot of the time when you get asparagus in the store, I would say they're probably a third as thick in the store.
Yeah, because they're trying to make the most off of their money, so they're just growing tons of it really quickly. So yeah, you get those really thin ones, and the stuff out in the wild has got a good base to it.
Yeah. So where do you forage for asparagus, particularly in Wisconsin?
It goes all over the place. Like I said, I've never been able to find it out in the woods. I've only found it on the sides of highways.
Yeah.
Along that fence line. So, but it's out there. You just gotta look for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so morels, I mean, we're kind of going back into the spring, but like you said, asparagus grows all summer. I know morel has a similar time frame as to when you can start foraging.
Morel mushrooms.
Morel mushrooms.
A lot of people don't know, yeah.
Yes, morel mushrooms, for those who are listening
Which
and have not been foraging.
Which kind of look like sea anemones.
Yeah, they look like little brains.
Yep. Like little
sponge
brains.
I was going to say a brain on a stalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those ones start popping up in the spring too, which, I mean, we could start with spring since you said that there's not a lot in the summer. We could start with some spring foraging. So there's asparagus, there's morels, there's a bunch of mushrooms actually in the spring, right? Mm-hmm. There's turkey tail, and is lion's mane also in the spring?
Lion's mane, I think, kind of goes all year. I'm not too familiar with it.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff do you forage for, Ramsey?
So I am kind of new to the foraging game to a point. I've researched a lot of it, and I've done some of it, and I want to get more and more into it so I can go out into the woods without anything and be okay for a weekend. But the kind of stuff, one of the biggest things that I go for is the broadleaf plantain.
Mm.
And I know I've talked about this in a previous episode, but you've seen it. If you don't know what it is, just Google broadleaf plantain. I guarantee you it's probably in your backyard, or it's in a field nearby, or somebody else's yard. It's a leafy plant. It kind of grows in a cluster that comes up out of the ground, and then it opens up, and it stays really close to the ground, maybe 5 inches total in diameter. And they're just so packed full of all these nutrients in them, and they taste a lot like spinach. So as long as you know you're paying attention to herbicides and pesticides, and you're harvesting it, you know, where you know that it's coming from, so it's going to be safe, just rinse it off. I toss them on burgers. You can throw them in a salad. They're absolutely delicious, and they're so nutritious for you.
And where do you typically find those?
You're growing in your yard.
Really?
Go out in your backyard, and they're going to be there. They like kind of that acidic, sandy soil. So I've found them growing up in my neck of the woods. I can find them pretty easily up here.
And these are what?
Broadleaf plantain.
Broadleaf plantain.
Yeah, I just looked it up. I feel like I would confuse this with a lot of other things. Am I going to kill myself doing this?
Well, we should probably talk about that.
Yeah, is this easily confused with other plants?
Well, this looks like every other thing I see in the
woods. That's what I mean. It's very...
I'm not aware of, and granted,
I could be eating the whole forest.
Everyone should take heed. I'm not an expert by any means. Always do your research. So anything that I'm saying on here, don't take it 110%. Go and look it up yourself. But there should be something to said about that, though, because many, many, many plants, berries, and mushrooms, they have all these lookalikes that are not edible and are very bad for you, especially mushrooms. Morels, specifically, they have one that looks so very identical, but it's toxic. You don't want to mess that one up. But and some of these need to be cooked first to be able to eat them. Some of them become inedible after they've aged or ripened to a certain point. So the biggest thing is just never eat something that you can't 100% ID. You know, you want to make sure that you know exactly what this is. And like I had said, with the herbicides and pesticides, you want to make sure that you're washing your food before you're eating it. Because if you're picking it up on the side of the highway, they could have vehicle exhaust all over it. Or if you're foraging near a farm, they could have fertilizer on it. So you really want to make sure that you're cleaning your stuff and you're making sure that you know exactly what you're grabbing.
Yeah, even if you're in the forest, I mean, there's not as much pesticide use in the forest and all that. But there's still, I mean, animals might have done something on it. Or
what do you mean by that?
You know, whatever. Well, there's all
just
kind of, even if they just crawl
answer.
Even if they just crawl over it. What was on their paws might be on there, you know?
On the front of identifying, are there any, like, foraging, like, field guides or anything else in particular that somebody can pick up that you'd recommend
if they want to get into foraging? Like
there's tons.
Maybe?
I'm sure there's apps out there. I haven't dug into specifically Wisconsin ones. Mm-hmm. I know there are plant identification ones out there. But as far as books, just a quick Google search, you can find there's a book called Midwest Foraging, Fall Foraging in the Northwoods, Wisconsin Wild Foods, all that kind of stuff. So there's tons of resources out there.
And have you ever had a bad experience, Ramsey, where you foraged for something and you're looking pretty healthy?
No, because I've practiced that if I don't 110% know that that's what I'm going to be eating, I don't eat it. There's been times with even broadleaf plantain where I've been looking at the plant, looking at the leaf, looking at everything around it, and I'm like, I'm not 100% on this. So I just go find one that I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
What makes it not 100%? It just doesn't look like it.
I mean, it could be a bunch of different things. Maybe some bugs ate some of the leaves, or maybe it's got a disease and it's, you know, some of the leaves are browner than they're supposed to be, or they're shaped a little bit differently. You know, I don't want to take that chance because you never know.
Right. What's the best way to wash it? Is it just water? Or I've heard like vinegar sometimes can help if you have like a squirt bottle of vinegar or.
Yeah, vinegar. I think that's more for like, I've heard that for like broccoli because it draws everything out of all those little crevices in there. Sure. But yeah, just water. Okay. You got a bottle of water with you, just rinse it off.
Yeah.
So
broadleaf plantain is one. And what time of year does that grow? All summer?
That's all year.
All year.
Well, obviously not winter, but right. You can go out anytime and get that.
Yeah. So that's one of them. Then you also mentioned, I think you mentioned this, at least I believe you mentioned it in the last podcast that we recorded. You do forage for medicinal plants sometimes, or you are aware of some that are more medicinal.
Yep, I'm aware of some of those. So broadleaf plantain is actually one of those that works too. It's a natural antihistamine. So you can, if you get bug bites, you chew it up into a little paste and you can slap it on there and it's going to help pull that toxin out or pull the stinger out.
Huh.
I've seen, on the show alone, a woman got bit by a brown recluse. And she used, I believe it was plantain and old man's beard. And she made a paste out of it and she slapped it on there. And she was able to stay out on the show because it pulled all those toxins out.
Wow. What's old man's beard?
It's a fungus. It looks like a beard. It's very, very stringy.
Really?
It hangs kind of the stuff that you think of down south a lot, all that stuff that's hanging in the trees.
Oh, I think you mentioned this last time because I looked this up too. Yeah, it's almost like Spanish moss.
Kind of, yeah.
It's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, but it's a fungus. It's a mushroom.
Huh.
Where obviously Spanish moss is moss.
Right. So old man's beard, is that something that you can, I mean, she obviously used it to, you said, rub on her skin?
Yeah, you chew it up into a paste and you put it on.
Is not something you would want to consume though, correct?
You could consume that one too. Okay. And it's got some, as far as its nutrient value, I'm not 100% sure on that, but it's got some good nutrients to it and it's going to help with, I think that one helps with some digestion and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Have you gone on any trips specifically for just to forage yet or like with the idea of foraging in mind? And if so, where?
No, most of mine have just been when I'm out doing some bushcrafty stuff. I just kind of take the opportunity to stop and look around and see what I can start identifying and seeing if I know that that's something I can eat. And then I'll just grab it quick and either take it with me to camp or eat it right then and there.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got broadleaf plantains. We've got old man's beard.
Asparagus.
Asparagus. We talked a little bit about morels. What other are your kind of go-to foraging items in Wisconsin?
At least up here by me, it's pretty much a no-brainer. They're everywhere, but blackberries and raspberries. You know, you find them around mid-July all the way to September, their season goes. But we've just got groves of them growing up here in the woods. They're so easy to find, and you can spend an entire day and not even make a dent in those.
Yeah. Do you just eat them plain or do you make jam?
I don't. I just eat them plain. That's something I'd like to get into at some point here. But when I was growing up, we had at my grandparents' farm, they had a huge raspberry patch out back. And we would just take these little ice cream pails and loop them through our belt loop. And we'd go out there and pick them all day. And one for me, one for the bucket, two for me, one for the bucket.
That's how I feel.
You know, keeps us entertained for hours.
That's the way to do it. So there is a difference between blackberries and black raspberries, correct?
Yes, those are black caps or black raspberries.
Ah.
And I don't know too much about those. Half the stuff that I've been harvesting probably has been black caps, and I just don't know it, but I don't know, the ones that you get out in the wild, they're smaller than your grocery store ones. I just can't believe the size of grocery store blackberries sometimes.
Oh,
those things are massive.
Yeah.
The ones out in the wild are a lot smaller. They're a lot more concentrated. And to me, they just taste so much better.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually had wild blackberries.
Yeah, I've only had them from the grocery store. I wonder how much difference there is in the nutrients.
Well, I always, like on my bike rides, I always find black raspberries around Wisconsin. or I mean around Madison.
Are you picking them off the tree and eating them or no?
Oh yeah, I usually have like a plastic bag in my like little thing on my bike, and I will pull them out and I'll take some home. But I don't think I've ever ran into blackberries because they are different.
They are different.
The black raspberries have the little hole in the middle, and the blackberries don't.
Yeah, and the blackberries are larger, just not as big as the ones in the grocery store, but they are larger.
Yeah.
So.
Well, those are a fun one to find.
Yeah, just be wary when you're picking those. Bears like them too, and you gotta make sure that you're paying attention to your surroundings, because I've had it when we were picking them and we found a bunch of bear cubs nearby.
Oh, boy.
That's... I was just going to ask you that. What did you do? Yep.
Well, I've grown kind of a hunting bear, so I'm not too worried about those. I've been around enough cubs that it's just be smart about things and you'll be fine.
Wow, that's a whole nother topic.
You know, kind of on the that, like, you know, finding blackberries in Madison, something that really I think anyone in the state can kind of forage for is dandelions, which I'm aware people often will make into a tea. Mm-hmm. Now, Ramsey, do you know, like, how you can kind of make tea out of wild plants? Like, is there anything in particular you have to do?
Dandelions specifically, I've made dandelion tea before, and it's absolutely delicious.
And very good for you.
Yeah, very, very good for you. It's a natural diuretic. Is that... Okay. That's going to be more for your spring, and they come back around just before fall, don't they? They kind of have two cycles.
Seems like they do, yeah. They pop up on my parents' lawn a lot.
Yeah, so again, make sure that you're harvesting them well, making sure that they're clean, you know, herbicides, pesticides, that kind of stuff. But you pop the head off, and I usually just leave them on a baking sheet out in the sun for the day, as long as it's a nice, bright, sunny day. Otherwise, you can throw them in the oven and at a really low temperature, as low as your oven will go, and just bake it for a few hours or leave them out in the sun for a few hours until they get really, really dry and feel like they're going to start kind of breaking apart in your fingers. Pick them all off, throw them in a jar, and there's your tea. You just take the leaves and put it in the water and steep it.
Huh.
Interesting. Well, there's something almost anyone at home can try.
Yeah, dandelions are technically weed, but they're pretty.
Yeah.
They help the bees, and they make a good tea for you. I mean, it's like...
Yeah,
you know, well, keep them. Don't throw
up until
the
early 1900s. People grew them. That was a crop that people grew because they're so packed full of nutrients, and every single part of the dandelion is edible, from the roots all the way up to the petals. So the roots, there a lot of I think Eastern medicine uses the roots for its medicinal purposes. The leaves are a great substitute for collard greens or putting it into a salad. The petals are all edible. The stalk is edible. They're a great plant.
Wow, that's interesting. So what other kinds of plants do you find for teas specifically, Ramsey?
Well, so one of them that you can find is wintergreen.
Really?
And
a peppermint.
Exactly, yep. They're a very low-growing, viney kind of weed-looking plant, too. Once you figure out how to identify them, they're kind of easier to spot. They grow up all in the Northwoods too, in that kind of sandy acidic soil. But they've got these little red berries that taste just like mint. You pop them in your mouth. They got a white flesh to them, red outside, and they taste exactly like mint. And they're a wonderful little snack when you find them.
Really?
Yeah.
But see, that leaves, one I would have to look up because I'd confuse them with the little poisonous red berries. Do they look like that?
They do look like that, but those ones grow on trees.
Oh, so these ones are, what did you say?
These ones are on the ground.
Got it.
Yep. So if you can find them on the ground.
Red berries on
noted.
The ground.
Noted.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, they have a white kind of translucent flesh to them. So if you break it open and it smells like mint, the poisonous ones aren't going to smell like mint.
Right.
That should be good to go. But again, identify it. But the leaves are all, you break the leaf apart and it smells exactly like mint. And you can steep those into a tea also.
And that's wintergreen. So that's what, I mean, that's where wintergreen flavor comes from, right?
It's from that plant.
That's cool. So what about, you mentioned the broadleaf plantain, and I know there's a couple others that I've read about. One is lamb's quarters. Have you ever foraged for that?
I have not. That one's a newer discovery to myself, but I did some research on it. They do have a very distinct leaf shape too. They kind of have these ridges as they go down. They're more of a spade, kind of an ovalish shape. Should be pretty decent to identify, but it's another weed that grows everywhere, from what I was reading. And they're absolutely packed full of essential vitamins.
Wow.
Which is kind of surprising with a lot of this stuff that we take for granted. You know, a lot of people are taking supplements to get their vitamins, you know, vitamin C, vitamin D, all that kind of stuff. But if you just go out into nature, you can find all that.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Like,
pine needles have 3 times the amount of vitamin C that an orange does. So if you've got a vitamin C deficiency, instead of going and taking pills, maybe go out and find some pine needles and try making a tea out of that.
That was really cool. Mm-hmm. And that one is, you know, a spinach-like plant. And then I also read that the seeds can be eaten later in the year. So I don't know if you read that too, but
I did. But I also read that the seeds are not worth it. The amount of effort it takes to harvest the seeds isn't worth the return.
Nutrient-wise.
Yeah, nutrients. It takes a lot to get a very yield. Yep.
That is something you got to take into account if you're going to spend all that time foraging.
Yeah.
And another one I read is that's in a similar vein is amaranth.
I don't know anything about that one.
And well, that one, it said it's similar to, you know, a lamb's quarters regarding how easy it is to find. And I don't know too much about it, but I think you can eat them raw or cook them, but it's a little bit more nuttier and a little bit sweeter.
Vegetable. That's something you got to keep in mind with the cooking things. The lamb's quarters, I was reading that they have a certain, I don't necessarily want to say toxin, but they have a toxin in them that it's okay to eat them raw in small quantities, but if you're going to be having a bunch of them, it's better just to cook it because then it neutralizes that toxin.
Right. Yeah, to be safe.
Well, and it is an anti-inflammatory, which is nice. That's kind of an ancient grain. There's actually another site I'll be happy to share called whfoods.com, and that stands for World's Healthiest Foods. And that will break things down to the level of ingredients and including things like ancient grains and amaranth. And they'll do a really good cross-section of what the nutrients are.
Yeah.
It won't tell you if you can find it in the wild necessarily or what it looks like, you know, if you're going to go foraging, but it will guide you in terms of how nutritious something is.
Which is helpful. Ramsey, yeah, do they have any areas in Wisconsin where you can pick, like, dark chocolate off of the trees?
No, but I have heard that if you go deep enough into the woods and you find a river and you follow that for enough time, you will find a Quick Trip.
Wow. I'm sold. I am sold.
Just keep that in mind if you ever get lost. You can find a Quick Trip. They should be out there.
That's hilarious.
Have you ever foraged for a Quick Trip?
No,
like
but
you're in the middle of nowhere and you're trying to find one.
I don't think it would be. I don't think it would be too much of a challenge.
No, those are very easily identifiable.
Yes, very well. They've made it so with their red striped building. So really quick, I do want to talk about the ethics of foraging because you brought that up in the beginning. I think it's important that if people are going to go out and forage after, you know, they get the specific phone apps or they get some kind of manual and they're, you know, bushcrafting or camping or however, doing a day trip in Wisconsin, what are the ethics of foraging? You mentioned with asparagus, you want to kind of leave that 2 inches. And I'm sure there's some ethics that are kind of more of an umbrella ethic to it that cover all plant species. But I know there are some that are just like really specific to each plant. Like morels, I think it's best to keep a mesh bag because then all the spores fall to the ground and then they can, you know, leaves some for next year for other people coming through.
Right. And that's going to be, you're going to need to do your own research on that kind of stuff to find the best practices on that kind of stuff. But generally, if you find a grove of, let's say, stinging nettle, because that's one of my other ones that I have on here, you don't want to cut them all down because that's going to damage the ecosystem. Right. So you're going to want to take a couple leaves off of each plant and kind of spread it all around through the whole area. Don't harvest everything on one single plant. You want to leave that so the plant can continue to grow. And then next year or later, you can come back and you can still find that stuff.
Are there any invasive species in Wisconsin that you can forage for?
That you just have to do some research on that one. There's tons of invasive species. Technically, I think lamb's quarters is. I think the Europeans brought that over, as well as broadleaf plantain. I believe the Europeans brought those over. So technically, they are invasive. By now, I mean, it's, you know, they're fine. But there's a whole, when you start looking into us, into this kind of stuff, especially that Midwest foraging book that I mentioned earlier, I mean, there's several inch thick books that they're loaded with hundreds of plants and fruits and vegetables that you can find out in nature that are perfectly fine for you to eat.
A lot of old school stuff that...
A lot of old school stuff that mm-hmm. As a culture, we have forgotten how to do this kind of stuff. And we rely on Quick Trip too much.
That's one of the reasons we actually chose this topic and wanted you in on it, because you know this stuff better than most. You don't know everything. None of us do. Mm-hmm. But this kind of gets you in that mindset.
Right.
And it shows you you can live off the land if you need to. Mm-hmm. If you're hungry and you don't have anything with you, there's plenty in nature available to you. And so this is designed not only to be informative, but a bit of a starting guide to even more.
And I think, too, it's one of those things where kind of getting back to your roots, literally, so to speak. But I mean that in the sense that a lot of people, I think, are really desiring to learn more about gardening. They're wanting to learn more about where the source of their food, what the source of their food really is. And I think that there's kind of this, I don't want to call it a fad, but this push to know and learn more about that. And it's not as though this is going to be somebody's full, you know, meal every single day for every meal kind of thing. But it's really helpful when you can learn a little bit about it, so you really can get that understanding of where does this food come from. And I think it sparks an interest in where does the food that is on your table every day truly come from.
Yeah, there's a big homesteading movement.
You
know, being able to and doing the canning and doing all that kind of stuff and taking care of yourself and your family. There's a big movement for that.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps you appreciate what you're eating and what you're consuming a lot more.
And it's a lot healthier, and you don't have all those pesticides, littered all over your food. If you're going and finding it or you're growing it yourself, you know exactly where it's coming from.
Yeah. There was a lot of better living through science in the 60s and 70s that now we're kind of the pendulum is swinging back.
Yeah.
And yeah, we mentioned farm to table, really nature to table or forest to table. That's what this is.
And I just wanted to mention a couple places that I had found that are, areas that you can forage, that you can forage
in the forest.
You can forest
in many of these areas.
I'm looking
too,
at the word forest as I'm saying this out loud. One, they're actually all kind of close to the Milwaukee area. So, Eric, you can go foraging after this. Haven Woods State Forest.
That's in the middle of the city.
Yep. It's the only urban state forest in the entire state of Wisconsin and foraging there is free and available. You can find wild berries, wild asparagus, mushrooms, nuts, which nuts was one we didn't talk about, Ramsey. So maybe we can end with something if you know of any nuts, too. But I'll just mention.
I really don't.
None?
I really don't.
Well, that's one we'll have to check into, and maybe we can get on the next podcast with that. But the two other ones, one is in Waukesha, Manuka Park.
Oh, yeah.
And that one's got a lot of mushrooms, ramps, sometimes morels in the spring. Pike Lake. That one's in Hartford, so you probably know where all
Washington
these are.
Washington County. Yeah, that's a beautiful place with great trails and a nice lookout. Yeah. But
well, it's
if
part
you
of the Kettle Moraine,
in there,
too.
Yeah, there is a lot there and some beautiful topography. So, and that's the thing. If you're in a hilly area, you're going to find a lot of variety at different levels and at different sides of the hill, actually.
Yeah. That's interesting, too. Yeah. But yeah, they've got garlic, mustard, and wild violets, a couple that we didn't talk about.
You know, it's actually funny. We were filming in West Bend in Washington County, and garlic mustard is considered a weed and an invasive species.
Huh.
Right? So they're trying to pick it and get rid of it in some of these volunteer things, but it is something you can't eat if you need to forage.
Yeah.
So it's
that is cool. I love learning about that stuff, though.
Yeah. Sometimes people want tossed is actually very valuable if you need it.
Right.
So
like dandelions.
Yeah. That was the other thing I was thinking of was dandelions.
Dandelions, mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. I did want to do one shout out to a place that we recently filmed in West Dallas. They're called Wild Roots.
Ah, yes.
And I don't know if you guys have ever been there. They are, the owners are T and T is the chef and the owner, and then along with Carly, and they are fantastic human beings. It was awesome filming there, but they actually do some foraging for the ingredients in their meals that they cook. And so it was awesome. We had Aperba, the host, actually go and do some morel hunting with Carly and T, and then they cooked us up a meal of morel mushrooms. I think they did like
awesome.
It was really cool. They did a if I can remember, it was a pesto toast, but it was not with basil. It was a white pesto. So I think it was, I can't remember what it was. I'll have to ask and then say it on the next podcast, because it was so good. And they put morels on top of that, and then they also made a morel pasta, and it was amazing. Mm. So Wild Roots has really, really good food in general, but very cool that a lot of their food is from, you know, the local farmers market, or they actually send foragers out. They have a foraging team that brings, I believe they bring morels and various other things throughout the year just straight to their door.
Nice.
That sounds
from
like
the
a
forest
good job.
To the door, yeah.
So, yeah, Ramsey, there's
Ramsey,
another,
there you
there's
go.
Another
yeah.
thing you could do. If you need a side hustle.
Wild Roots in West Dallas, pretty yeah. cool place.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ramsey. This is awesome. I'm
going
to have to check out some other places. Maybe Milwaukee's not too far, so maybe you'll have to get over there and
yeah, I don't know
if
you could forage in the middle of the city like that, but hey, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, and jump on the Wisconsin DNR website. They have a whole bunch of resources on there. Literally just Google where to forage in Wisconsin or Wisconsin forageable foods. Any of that kind of stuff, you're going to find a wealth of knowledge. And I'm just going to make a plug, my Instagram account, Northman_Bushcraft. That's something I'm going to be starting to focus on a lot more, is I'm going to start doing some content on foraging. So
heck yeah. Before we sign off, do you have any camping trips coming up?
Sort of in the works, but not on paper yet.
Not quite yet. Next time we do a podcast with you, we'll have to do it after that and you can update us.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, exactly,
a good foraging
so.
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Hopefully no bears, no bear attacks.
Or bobcats.
Or bear
Jeez.
Fans.
That's my
yeah.
bane.
All right, cool.
Ooh, well, thanks, Ramsey.
Thanks, Ramsey.
All right, thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Chat
you too.
Soon.
Bye.
It'd be nice if you could forage for Cheetos, but you can't find those in the wild.
I'm just looking for the dark chocolate. But the Quick Trip will suffice.
I have
for
a
now.
Feeling Quick Trip and restaurants are in our near future.
Yep.
All right.
The Cabin is brought to you by Group Health Trust. Serving local governments and school districts, the WCA Group Health Trust partners closely with members to fulfill their employee health benefit obligations in a fiscally responsible manner. Learn more at WCAGHT.org.
Cabin's also brought to you by Washington County. You know, we were talking about that a little bit from a foraging standpoint and everything. But actually, Washington County is an awesome place for golf. There are several areas around the state well known for it. But Washington County is one of the best golf destinations in the state. Just 30 minutes northwest of Milwaukee, depending on where you're starting from in the city. But it has that picturesque landscape like we talked about in Kettle Moraine. And there's a lot of challenging courses, even like the municipal one, Washington County Golf Course. It's the number one municipal golf course in Wisconsin, offering those beautiful views. Kettle Hills is a pretty cool one, too. And the Kettle Moraine area and those views at Washington County Golf Course, 72, par 72 course. So that is challenging. Now, for world-class golfing, Erin Hills is the place. Home to the 2017 U.S. Open, Erin Hills is one of the most challenging and prestigious courses in the country. With that natural terrain, immaculately maintained fairways and greens, and that gorgeous view of Holy Hill from pretty much every spot on the course, it's no wonder golfers come from all over the world to come and test their skills there. And actually, if you want something a little more laid back, Honeycore Golf, HONEKOR. Golf and Country Club has a family-friendly atmosphere and a nine-hole course. So, I mean, you got
more.
A nice variety of anything and everything you could want.
That's me right
That's
there.
That's your speed right there? Yeah. I thought it was mini golf.
Yeah, well, mini golf is really my speed.
That and a couple of Caddyshack lines we're in. Learn more about Washington County and all it offers at visitwashingtoncounty.com. By the way, Anna, we got another review.
Ooh.
Yeah. And here we go. So, Susan, where's our...
review of the week.
Right. So our review of the week today is from Ben C100. Was submitted on June 30th. Celebrating Wisconsin is the title of it, and he says, "Hi, Cabin Pod. I've been along for the ride since episode one, and you're still a highlight of my week over 180 episodes later," which we really appreciate. "The deep dives and hidden gems wow visitors, transplants, and lifelong residents alike. You guys celebrate and preserve Wisconsin's quirky culture so well." And then he has a few episode recommendations. The inter and intrastate rivalries episode. We have talked about that, and we'll work on that. Reunion episode. That would be fun. OG Audio Dave. No offense, Logan.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mariah, in fact, I think she might be in Wisconsin this week, actually.
Is she?
But Mariah lives out in around Kansas City now. Me, Ellen, previous producer, a couple producers ago, covering what they've been up to and what they miss about Wisconsin. I wouldn't be much of a reunion person. I've been here the whole time.
This is true. But that would actually be really cool. I'll let you finish and then I'll comment.
Fun to have everyone else. And yeah. Hey, Eric, your hair was darker when we started. Yeah, great. And he also suggested one about cool Wisconsin Instagram accounts. And here's his plug. I run Wisconsin Wayfarer. If you ever have an episode opening for a guest host, we will keep that in mind. That's how we got a Perba in here.
Keep all those ideas in mind. Yeah. So a reunion episode too. Would be a lot of fun.
It would be. So we'll get working on that.
And join us next week when we pair up with some of the best wine and cheese destinations across Wisconsin. Should be fun.
Hungry and thirsty for that already. All right.
Today's episode of The Cabin was hosted and produced by Eric Paulson and me, Anna Elise Beckman, with guest Ramsey Plouts. Audio engineering and video teasers by Logan Ingram, with social media by Adeline Savanak. The Cabin is a production brought to you by Discover Media Works. To learn more, head to discovermediaworks.com. And don't forget to please leave that review.
Let's go forage for wine and cheese for next week.
I'm in. Quick trip.